Good morning, everyone. I believe that some of our problems have been fixed, and that's good enough for now. I'm pleased to see this many of you and your smiling faces, especially considering the massive attendance when I left the bar across the water last night, just before midnight. my name is Ib Raun, and we will spend the next 90 minutes together. Our topic this morning is the learning meeting, and I will give you some examples of very simple techniques for participant involvement. One word about me, I work at this institution called Learning Lab Denmark. I am part of a group that does research into what we call the facilitation of knowledge processes. If you have 5 or 50 or 500 people together in a room for a couple of hours or a couple of days, how do you create processes that will help people learn as much as possible and share knowledge and have a great time and produce the results that they need? That's me in a short nutshell. I wonder about you. I'd like to know who you are, but I can't. But I think that you may be able to find out who you are. I see you have the sound problem fixed, and that's fine. I'll be with you in a second.
Okay.
Because what I would like you to do when I say go ahead in just a second is for all of you to leave your chairs and move towards an open space and spend 6 or 8 minutes meeting people you don't know. I know you're sitting people next to people that you probably know. Please now, as I say, I'll ask you to get up and spend a couple of minutes saying hello to people, either briefly who you are, where you come from, or more extendedly, but be sure to meet at least 2, 3, 4, 5 people that you don't know. I will get your attention again at the end, either by speaking into this mic or by clicking a couple of glasses together. Okay? So go ahead. As you're trying to find your seats, now this is a new sound. Is it okay? Can you hear me in the back? Okay. As you're trying to find your seats, I'd like you just to pay attention for a second here, because I would like you all to be seated at least next to one person that you don't know, either on your left side or on your right side. Please make contact. Is there a person? And you're not competing for the same one? Because if you are, I'd like you to change your seat. Are you okay?
Yes.
Are you all there? Okay. Okay, and you've met that person by now? Excellent. Here we go. A change of seats. Very good. All right. I hope you all had a chance to meet a few people. And you'll be needing that a little later, especially the person that you're sitting next to that you don't know. Let's start my presentation. I would like to talk to you for about half an hour, and then after that we'll be doing something else. Our topic this morning is, of course, learning meetings. What are they? Well, they are an alternative to the way that large meetings and conferences are usually conducted. And let's start off by taking a look at what you know so extremely well. The professional conference is what I call it here, as distinct from, the scientific conference. Any large meeting that has a number of PowerPoint presentations as its central focus. On the left, the way it is, and on the right, some problems with that. Most presentations are one way. A speaker will stand at the podium and deliver information to somebody in the audience. And that's fine, except for the fact that most people are two-way. We understand best in dialogue when we can ask questions and we can talk to each other. We can research shows that we can listen to a lecture for about 20 or 30 minutes after that attention drops. And you probably all know that from your schooling and from your college, that long, boring lectures are the mainstay of professional education as well as of conferences and meetings. What you do is you sit and listen for a long time, maybe hours on end, day after day. But the point is that learning requires active using. You need to use the knowledge that you are being imparted, use it or lose it, as the saying goes. If you don't use it, it just disappears. So presentations are a pretty ineffective way of transmitting information. There's a Q&A session at the end. Well, they can be fine, but sometimes they degenerate into "see me, I am clever too." People in the audience, if they get to ask questions, have been repressed for so long, hours and hours of passive sitting, that at some point people will jump up like Jack out of the box and say, release the information, projects, the intentions, everything that people want to share with everybody else. Breakouts are excellent if you have parallel sessions. You have keynote and large audience plenary sessions, then you have breakouts like we have today. But many breakouts are just conferences anew. If they're called workshops, well, there's still a series of presentations. Very little room for actual working. Panels, we may have a panel of experts at the end of the day. Well, I call it here, well, that's congestion on one-way street. It's more experts who want to tell you their opinion of things, and people in the audience are still left passive. And then the important part of it, the going to a conference that many people really appreciate and want to go for the networking part. This conference is pretty good in terms of networking opportunities, but many conferences that we know, professional one-day conferences, well, there's a lunch and there may be a reception afterwards. And if you're from Denmark or Scandinavia or maybe Europe in general, you're probably not very good at networking, not very good at coming out like Americans can do. They can say, "Hi, I'm Joe. What's happening?" That's what an American can do. We in the North, in Europe, are more timid. We tend to stick to ourselves. You are basically on your own at most conferences. And if you bring a colleague to a conference, that's likely going to be the person that you're going to stick to for the rest of the day, because you're comfortable with each other and you may not discover that there are hundreds of very smart and intelligent people at the conference that you could have met. But how do we get to meet those people? So those are some of the problems with the classical conference. I work in a research institution, so it's appropriate for somebody like me to delve into why is this? What kind of model of knowledge and learning is it that lies behind this kind of setup that we know from the conference and we know it from the traditional lecture? Well, it's something that we in this context may call the empty container model of learning. We have this notion that there are experts, they come in with a full container, all kinds of things are being held in there, knowledge and information and experience, and they want to transmit that to the audience who are supposed to not know very much. That's why they're being kept passive hours and hours and hours while people on the podium parade their knowledge and share it with the audience. And we sometimes, at least in Danish, think of audience, people going to a conference as wanting to be filled up. We need to get inspiration, and we want to sit down, and we do that again for hours and hours while we're being filled up. This model of learning, if you're concerned and know about educational research or practice, you will know that this model has been much ridiculed and maligned for the past 50 years, and rightly so, because this is just not how we learn. We need to come up with different notions of how is it that we take in things during conferences. And let me propose an alternative. Learning as human co-flourishing is what I write here. Well, let's look at people as kernels, as little seeds that can become wonderful things. People are not blank slates or empty containers. They are born with all kinds of potentials, needs, desires, instincts, interests, projects that mature as we grow up, and which I have indicated there by the arrows pointing in many directions. These are all the things that we want to do. We are able to walk, we are able to communicate, we are able to relate to people, to act responsibly in the world. All these things are what we want to do, and we want to do that in our professional lives as well. We want to flourish as human beings. Human flourishing is the philosophical term that Aristotle invented for this, and which is seeing a resurgence again in philosophy. That may be the purpose of human life and society, to enable people to flourish. And in the context of conferences, well, conferences are occasions for people to get together and inspire each other and learn from each other and flourish together. So let's look at conferences as a locus, as a venue for human co-flourishing. That's what we want to do with meetings when we get 100 or 1,000 people together. If they could only get together and find somebody they could get inspired by, so that we can have that little spark flying when your project sort of looks like the project that I'm having. The intentions and the things that I want to do in the world match those that you're interested in. When two of us can get together, either me or somebody that I listen to from at the podium, or me and another attendee at a conference, that's the great occasion. And that's the kind of meeting that we want and that we look for, and that we have like once a year or once every 10 years, where incredibly wonderful things happen because we met the right people and were inspired by them. So let's look at the conference as a forum for learning, mutual inspiration, and co-flourishing. Now, these may sound like wonderful ideas. Of course, the question is, what do you actually do in practice once you want to accomplish this at a conference? And in order to get closer to that, we have formulated a bunch of design principles for learning conferences. And as you can see here, well, you have the arrow going from the left to the right. As before, that's your presentation. What I'm saying here is it needs to be concise. So no blah, 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 only 3 bullet points. That's what we want from presentations, concise presentations, half an hour long presentations. But we want more than just communication from one person to another. We want to give people in the audience a chance to actively interpret and digest what they hear from the podium, because that's what we need to do. We don't need to be passive listeners all day. We need to get up there and think about and talk about the stuff that we hear, so we can relate it to our own experience and see what is the mix between the things that I'm hearing now and all the things that I'm concerned about in my professional life. So there must be opportunities in the audience for active interpretation of what's being said by the speakers. The third principle is that of self-formulation, that all the happy little people that go to the conference, well, they want to talk. And that's what we see when people during Q&A jump up and ask these weird questions coming from left wheel, where they're coming from. Well, that's because we want to talk about what concerns us. And of course, if you have 100 or 1,000 people together, they can't all get the stage and talk about, even for 5 minutes, what's their concern. But we can create opportunities for people during the conference to talk to each other. Because most people don't want an audience of 1,000 people, but they may want an audience of 1 or 2 other people who are interested in the topic that we are talking about today, and share that with a few other people. So opportunities for people during a conference to talk to each other. And a session given this afternoon by my colleague Nina Tange, I think at 4:30, will give you an example of what is it you can do with people at a huge conference to give them this kind of space where they're together, just the 3 of them, talking about something that has been discussed all day from the podium, but which they like to bring out some of their own concerns. You'll be doing that if you join her session this afternoon. Our fourth design principle is knowledge sharing and networking. There must be explicit opportunities, not just a lunch, not just a reception. You need to do more for people to bring them together and say hello and meet each other, because we may not be as socially competent as we would like to be, and there are many interesting people that can be met. So the conference organizers should provide facilities and processes facilitated for knowledge sharing. And that brings me to the last point, facilitation. All these things, if you want to do new things, introduce new learning techniques at your conference, you need to have somebody who is comfortable with playing that role and can create the right sense of comfortable atmosphere of trust where people will actually do what you ask them to do. Because if you ask people at a very conventional conference in a country where they're not used to just sharing knowledge or with professionals that are not used to that, if you ask them to talk to their neighbor, they may think, my neighbor, who is he? Does he know more than I do? Can I expose myself to this other person? Dare I talk my mind? So you need to create the kind of atmosphere and to conduct the whole meeting in a way that is slightly different from what it's usually done. And I use the word facilitation because the facilitator is the kind of person we need for a conference like this. Now, this theory and these principles, we wanted to put them to the test. This slide simply has what I just said for your later consumption. We wanted to test these ideas. Would they actually make sense if you went out and tried them out in a number of conferences? So we got a research project together with Radisson Sas Hotels, Best Western Nyborg Strand, Odense Congress Center, Hotel Legoland, and Danske Bank. One bank with a lot of meetings and four meeting venues. And we identified 30 large meetings and conferences, each of about 100 to 300 people. What we did, we met with the planners of these meetings and redesigned the meetings, put in techniques for learning and participant involvement, and we coached the meeting facilitators to help them do these things. And what we did also, we had a researcher involved, of course, who took observations and measures of subjective outcomes, mostly from questionnaires from the attendees. What did they think about the various techniques that we introduced? Those techniques that we used, I have grouped them. A whole bunch of things here. I won't explain them in detail. They're explained in detail in the book that was on your seat, and if some of you didn't get it, we'll make sure that you will. They're described, a couple of pages for each technique. I've grouped them here under the four first design principles. Well, you have presentations. You can break it in two. You can do it as an interview. For active interpretation, well, the mini dialogue with the person sitting next to you, a constructive opening question. You think about stuff silently. There are question cards you can write. The speaker's corner, we'll do that later today as well. For self-formulation, there are little groups where you put people together so that they can direct the speaker where he should go after a break. There are two consultants free of charge. A little coaching activity. That's the one my colleague Nina Tange will do this afternoon. Participant construction, where you ask attendees to construct their futures on the spot rather than wait and pack the knowledge that they got today away, use it on location. And the networking things, well, meet people. You can have tables for lunch that are six person. You can find a new seat. You can do a lunch that has networking activities associated with it. Those were the 17 things we did during this research project at the 30 conferences. I just want to mention to you very briefly some of the results. Well, we were quite ambitious at the beginning and wanting to do far more advanced things than the very simple things that I have just outlined. But what we found was that mostly small changes prove possible. And that was a big learning for us and thinking, well, you need to be conservative if you want to change conferences because people have been going to conferences for years and they may not want to move as fast as you do if you're impatient to change the traditional format. So take very small steps. And if you do that, we found that small steps will make a big difference. If you just ask people to talk to the person sitting next to them, that's the only thing you do during a whole day of a regular conference. People will go away and think, that was a little different, this conference, just for the 7 minutes that they spoke to somebody else that they wouldn't all and otherwise have talked to. So small changes make a big difference. We found that about two-thirds of participants were satisfied, but there were a small minority of people that were not happy with what we were doing. The term that we coined was that they wanted the professional movie theater. They want to go away to the conference that they go to once a year only. And they want to be entertained by professional and smart people who are on the podium, and they don't want to do weird things with other people in the audience. They have paid maybe what they think is a lot of money to be here, and they want the best knowledge available, and that's not to be had from the person sitting next to them. And that's very important, to know the people that are in the room with you, what is it actually that they want. We found that meeting planners and the hosts, the organizers and the facilitators were highly satisfied. One thing we found was almost always successful, with the exception that I mentioned here, with the mini-meetings. We also discovered the fact that the facilitator has an important role to play here. If you do things, introduce learning techniques during a conference, don't do the same thing three or four times. This will bore the audience. There needs to be progression and variation, so you do different things during a day. I have a note there that says the kinds of folks that like learning processes, and I indicated some of them. If you're away only once a year, maybe that's not the right forum to try learning techniques. If you deal with people that go to meetings all the time and are professionally involved in speaking and thinking, then they're more comfortable with other people. Introverts like researchers and computer people tend to be a little more slow in getting up and mingling. Extroverts will do it very easily. If you have salespeople or nurses, they will mingle and talk to other people like nobody's business. So there are some lessons to be learned in experimenting with these things about exactly what kind of meeting is that you want to experiment and do different things with. And the last point that I mentioned, there is a cultural factor. These conferences that we did were all in Denmark with Danes, and I'm sure there is a cultural bias of some sort that I haven't figured out yet. But there is in Scandinavia and maybe in other Northern European countries as well, that we're used to from kindergarten, from early school, to sit in a circle, and if you stick your hand up, you're allowed to speak, and your voice and your opinion is as good as anybody else's in the circle. And if you're used to contexts and organizations and kinds of schooling that are slightly more authoritarian than that, then you will be more reluctant to speak up if you think you are in a group of people where some are smarter or have higher status or better positions than you are. So one should be concerned about the cultural factors, the knowledge-sharing culture that exists with your people, and not push people over the edge and have people that are reluctant for cultural reasons come forward, have them come forward. It will only embarrass them. So there is much to be known about the exact audience of people that you're dealing with. All right. I think that's about as much as I have to say at this point. I would like you to spend a minute reflecting on what I said, and I would like you to do it in a particular way. Because, as always, when you hear a presenter, somebody speaking, you sort of have a range of reactions. There are things you just don't like and that don't speak to you at all. And then there's sort of a middle spectrum of things that I just find and I agree and I know that. And then at the other end of the spectrum, there are the few inspirations and good ideas and moments where you thought, gee, that's new, that's interesting. Now, those are the ones that I would like you to capture, to get a hold of. Look through the book or your printout, if you have that, of the presentation. Find one or two or three things that you thought were inspiring or that made you think something that you haven't thought before, or stuff that you have thought before that you now see, this is very interesting, this resonates with an experience that I have. Write down one or two of those things and share them in a couple of minutes with that person sitting next to you, okay? So see if you can inspire that person, and I'll give you 2 minutes just in silence to write down those couple of things, and then after that, I'll ask you to talk to that other person. So go ahead. All right, thank you everyone. Now, so when I ask you to in a second, please turn to that person next to you. And if you don't see anyone next to you, well, get up and find somebody else. I'm sure that there are people who like to be talked to. I'll give you 6 or 8 minutes to share those inspirations. What was it that resonated with me? Gee, that's interesting. What resonated with me was this. Spend 6 or 8 minutes, and I'll call your attention again after that. So go ahead. Thank you. I hope you all had a chance to flex your minds. Let's spend a few minutes just hearing from a couple of you. Some of those points of inspiration or resonance, and after which we'll take questions per se, if you have questions. So any of you want to share what you talked about or what's on your mind in terms of, that's interesting. Excuse me, I think we need to have the mic, it just occurs to me. Because this session, you all know, is being recorded.
Okay, my name is Sally Smith, and I'm from Belgium. I'm Rohit Talwa. I've run a lot of workshops and things, and one of the interesting things that struck me was that when you run workshops at events, the organisers always want you to give the handouts beforehand, as if the content is entirely known by you, and all the questions the audience could possibly have are already answered by you. And what we prefer to do is actually take the content from the event and include it in the handouts, but also take questions that the audience have at the event and create the answers afterwards and then send it out as a combined workshop handout. So you genuinely show the entire content of the event and you respect the audience's, you know, interests and issues. And it was really, I didn't know why I did that, but in a sense, you know, the points you gave really brought that home to me.
How to include more of what the participants bring to the session in the proceedings. Excellent. Thank you. Other points of interest or inspiration?
Hi, Carol McKellar from the UK. I think those of you that know me know that I'm very supportive of an interactive approach that people can only learn while they're involved. But I think one of the things that came through very clearly is if you're trying to create that sort of project work or teamwork, it needs a leader. And the importance of having a trained facilitator who can manage that whole process and really make sure that everyone's involved and that everybody gets something out of it. So the importance of the facilitator.
Well put. Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
Bruce Taylor, also British, but from Brussels, from Belgium. I think that impressed us was the networking. I think many of us suffer from that where there is no structured way of getting to know people, that you know that in a conference of 300 people, there are 10 people that you really want to talk to, but you don't know how to find them. And many of us have been in that situation where we don't know anybody. The only people you go up and talk to are other lonely people like you. And I think any way of structuring that networking, and the networking in the educational system, in the educational sessions, is very different from the networking outside. I mean, we should have had yesterday 5 minutes after Mads Ovesen's speech to sit and reflect in silence and then discuss it with our neighbours, because by the time we left the hall we were all dying for a drink and, you know, we're probably meeting other people and talking to other people about different things, and we didn't have time to reflect on what he said, which was really so important to what all of us do. Thank you.
Wonderful.
That came from a group of us.
So the reflection and the networking, those two aspects, talking to other people, to digest and to meet and find the right people.
My name is Martin Venes from Belgium. And I would like to build on what Carol McKellar just said about the facilitator. And it's just that I have the impression, it occurs to me that this industry is like a very big industry. It's bigger than the pharmaceutical industry. And we are construction industry, for example, but then without the architects. So this is a massive, big industry without, and we don't have meeting designers or meeting content managers or however we will call them in the future. There's just a few of them here. And Eric is one of them, and he's from Holland, which is next to Belgium. But I mean, that's really the metaphor I see when I see this industry. It's like a big industry, like the construction industry, but without architects.
So architects being the facilitators.
Yeah, and it would be great to have you start a master degree in meeting design management or meeting content management, so we could have students that come out with a master degree of doing this kind of work.
Wouldn't that be terrific? Thank you. I agree. Let's say that was it with the inspiration, the resonance. Are there distinct questions, per se, that you'd like to ask? Let's take a couple of those, if there are any that came to your mind. Here's one. You go ahead. The big microphone.
Can you point out certain the role that a facilitator should have within meetings, or is it different with every sort of meeting?
Well, off the top of my head, I can't say what I just said before, more than what I just said before. And in fact, that's okay, because the role of the facilitator is pretty well illustrated and described in the literature. So may I also refer you to the lady who spoke just before? She's an expert facilitator.
Okay, thank you.
So sorry, but thank you. Let me take the mic again. Anything else?
Sorry, Mitchell Beer from Ottawa, Canada. That's not next to Belgium. Not nearly. Not a question, but just an observation that what you're doing, referring to experts in the audience, saying, no, I have nothing to add, but go to the literature. I think that's the first time in 22 years covering meetings and events that I've seen a speaker do that, and it's brilliant.
My goodness.
If I may.
You may. Of course you may. Thank you. A last question?
I'm Mieke from the Netherlands. I actually do organize a meeting for researchers. And you said, well, some people don't want the active participation. But then in the first sheet, it was obvious that one-way presentations is not the best thing. So I'm wondering, should you then just rest and say, okay, then we do it one way, even though we know that's not the best way to learn? Or should we try and do something different anyway? I just find it hard. Yeah, when you research your audience, do you just go by what the audience is, or should you try to trigger them anyway?
Of course you should. I completely agree with you. It's just that one should be cautious. That has been my experience. And take one step at a time rather than five. But I would completely agree with you. People that are not used to these things, well, they better get used to them. The question is, how fast will you do it? How much dare you risk your one event where they may not come back the next time if you just did one little thing too much? So that's my only concern. But push people as much as you think is safe. That's definitely what we should do. Excellent. Let me take that again. Thank you. What I would like you to do now is to again to reflect a little on your own. And the question that I'd like you to reflect on is, if you were to do some of this or more of this, if you're doing this sort of thing already in terms of participant involvement and getting your attendees to be active and talk and share, what sorts of things would you do in your daily practice or at your next event? Okay, so the first one or two or three steps that you would take as you come back home, and hopefully this presentation and our session together here resonates in your mind and you'd like to do something about it. What is the first thing, the first couple of things that you'd like to do? This is what I would like you to think about for a couple of minutes, as before, in silence. Jot down your thoughts. Well, I think I would do this, and I would talk to that person, and next time I would do this little thing, and maybe we should discuss how we do this the next time we do that event. So first steps like that. I would like you to write down those, And once you've done that, I'd like you to get together on the floor with two other people and share those first steps. And you'll get about 10 minutes to do that, okay? So write down a couple of first steps, and then when you've done that, I'll tell you exactly what to do with that. So go ahead. Thank you, everyone. Your thinking has almost been audible. So what I would like you to do now is to take the couple of first steps that you've been thinking about and get up, find two people that you don't know at all. Just stand here for like 10 minutes and share those points. And sharing means please... Please not yet, Martin. Sharing means that you simply tell your points. And what do the other two people do as you talk your points? Well, they listen attentively. And if you, as a listener, can express some sort of acknowledgement or appreciation for what you're hearing, like, I think that's an important second step, and, I would do something similar. If you can do that honestly, then do so. Because that's the sort of thing you need if you want to do something else or something more. A little attention, a little acknowledgement or appreciation even from people that are listening to you. So if you can do that authentically, then please do so. And once you've done that for 10 minutes, I'll get your attention again and ask you to sit down and we'll conclude the session together. Okay, so go ahead. All right, thank you everyone. I hope that's all of you. Or at least most of you had a chance to tell a couple other people what you were thinking was and what you would do with these thoughts of yours. We'll leave that at that. And what I'd like to do at the end is to draw your attention to the fact that is more than obvious to all of you, that what we've been doing this morning, we've been talking, the content of our meeting has been the learning meeting. But of course, we've been doing a few things that are learning meeting-like. And it's those things that I'd just like to draw your attention to in a slightly more systematic way. So let's see here. Does it happen? It does. There we go. So learning techniques we use today, and I almost hesitate to call them techniques, and that's been a problem all along because they're so simple. The first thing we did was, of course, meet people, but then that's just mingled to create a friendly learning space to help your attendees at the meeting become aware that everybody else in the room is pretty nice as well, and they can smile and say friendly little things to each other, so that when you get into the big, intimidating auditorium with hundreds of people that you think are far smarter than you, and they just sit there by themselves waiting for the action to happen, well, why not loosen that up a little so you get to realize that people sitting around you, well, they're actually prone to smile, and it's sort of a place where you can relax and pick up your ears and learn things. So a little mingling there at the beginning of a meeting, always a good thing to do if you're together for a whole day. Do your introductions and your welcomes, and then let people talk to each other for 5 or 10 minutes at the beginning. The next thing we did, I divorce your companion. I think in the book it's called Separating Colleagues, and that's this thing that I mentioned to you, or that we talked about, that you often bring colleagues to a conference, and because you don't want to be rude to your colleague, you can never really tell this person, let's be separate for a while and talk to some other people than each other, because otherwise you'll spend the entire conference talking about office matters back at home rather than meeting all these other interesting people. So the facilitator can help people just split apart for the morning session, or we've done it in conferences after lunch, just telling people when you come back after lunch, we want you all to find somebody else to sit next to. So take your stuff with you to lunch and come back and find a seat next to somebody else. And pretty much everybody will do that. And those who don't want to do it, they don't do it, and that's, of course, perfectly fine. And the learning point is, as I write here, everyone makes an effort with a stranger. If you're discussing things with your colleague, you're more likely to sort of make shortcuts, and maybe it's good for you because you can get straight to the heart of the matter. But if you're not all that interested in what happened, then you're more likely just to sort of blow it off if you're with a person that you're comfortable with. But if you're with a stranger, you really make an effort to think hard and to inspire the other person and be attentive and be a good listener. And those are all the qualities that we want in a learning situation. So that's a good little thing to do. Now, also notice that after my presentation, what I asked you to do was not just to talk to the person next to you about any odd thing. I wanted you to talk to the part of the whole spectrum of reactions that you have to anything that a speaker will say, to the spectrum, the end of the spectrum that says, what inspired you? Because, of course, that's what you want to take with you from the session, and that's what you want to talk to the person next to you about. What inspired you? What got your juices flowing? That's what we want to talk about. And if you can get your people in the audience to address those things, it's likely that far more learning will come out of it rather than you just sharing your sort of disenchantment with this and that didn't get you any further. So if you can get the situation energized that way, that's a way to do it. The silent reflection, you tried that a couple of times. It's a rare thing to do in a huge auditorium, because what do we do with all this silence? It's always almost intimidating that, hey, we're so many people together and we're just being quiet. But of course, that's perfectly natural, and it can be, and we often are when we need to think about things. We just rarely are with a bunch of other people. But if you've had a lot of impressions, like speeches and stuff during the whole day, then maybe it's good just to shut all that out and look at your paper and think your own thoughts. Introverts love this kind of thing. If you have a bunch of engineers, they will start doing this before you even set go, because they're so used to sitting down and doing the sums all by themselves. So that's excellent for people who are into their own minds. And that leads naturally up to the next one, the mini dialogue, because that's good for extroverts. Those are people who don't know what they think before they've said it. So they like to speak their minds, and a lot of people work that way, that I need to say what I think before I really know what I think. So a mini dialogue is an excellent thing for people to clear their minds, not just to chit-chat about everything, anything, but it's really a sort of a technique for elucidating topics that's talking what you're not so sure about, bringing it out, and seeing some confirmation from the other person and becoming clear that way. Plucking the last thing, no, the number six thing, hear the best in the whole group. That was exactly what I did with you. Once you're done with your mini dialogue, I just ask you, can we hear from a couple of you? And you know the situation where you have people going into groups of a large meeting of 50, a staff meeting or something, and then they go into eight groups of six people, and they come back and they need to report to the plenary again. And you hear the first report and the second report and the third report, and it's getting more and more boring because there's just not this much variation. So doing the plucking is a way of getting over that. You simply see, you want to hear from the couple of you, those who had ideas or who were inspired or energized by something. Well, those are the people that we want to hear from once we're back together, all of us. Not slavish reports of every little minute detail faithfully recorded by the group representative, but just plucking like you would pluck flowers. Where the energy is, that's what we want to be. Number seven, start your future here and now. Your first steps using today's inspiration, that's what we did, that's what we were thinking about and then talking about. Because I could just have left it at that like half an hour ago and said, go off and do more of this. But what any speaker, of course, wants to do is to plant his inspiration much more in the minds of the participants. And they sort of want that too. So how can we bring that active reflection into the room? Well, by asking people to consider your first steps. If you go to a good meeting or a good conference where you are inspired by something, you will naturally want to do something with it later. But it tends to get crowded away and get lost in the clutter of your desk once you get back. So the more you can help your attendees start their future right now while we're here, while we're hot, while we're thinking about the topic. Write down those first steps. The more likely it is that those steps will actually be realized and bear fruition once you come back to the office. I think in the book we call that use input. It escapes me. Use input for our own projects or something like that. It's one of the last techniques mentioned. But it's a good thing to do at a conference generally if you have the time. And the last thing, that's the speaker's corner is what it's usually called, and also at this conference we'd like to call it speaker's corner, because that's a corner where you can sort of crowd the speaker into after the presentation. This is something you should consider for your conferences, because normally what happens with a speaker is that he'll pack his stuff together and a few people, and it's crowded and the next speaker needs to get on. Where can the 5 or 10% of the audience that are really, really interested in this topic, where can they actually meet this speaker before he takes off for the next important engagement? Well, as you put your conference together, ask the speaker specifically to hang on during the next break and make him or herself available for the 20 minutes in the lobby. Put up a little cocktail table with some Hershey Kisses and some water, and tell the speaker to go there right after the presentation, so that the 10 or 15 people who really, really want to ask a couple of extra questions of this speaker can go there and talk to him. And we did this in our research project, and we found that that was good for a couple of other reasons, namely also for the facilitator in the room to deflect weird questions from the audience by saying, gee, that's a very interesting question that requires a thorough answer. Could I ask you to ask that question of the speaker afterwards? And we wouldn't have to deal with it, of course, that's the subtext. You wouldn't have to deal with that really weird question while you're all together. But that person can get to talk to the speaker afterwards. And the second thing we found was that once the 10 or 15 people who are really keen on this particular topic would gather around the speaker, they would wait in line, and while they were waiting, they would talk to each other and do a little networking, because those are the ones who are particularly interested in this topic. And gee, we've found the 10 out of the 150 people in the audience that were really into this thing. So it's a good little networking occasion too. You may never get to ask your question of the speaker, but you found two other people who are really interested in this topic too. So, and that's how we will conclude this session, by me saying I will be available right after this session at the cocktail tables just outside of here. And then also there is a formal speaker's corner thing, I think, at 2 o'clock this afternoon, somewhere in A1, I understand. So if you have further questions, you can find me there as well. I hear people gearing up for lunch. I hope it's okay with you that we conclude this way, and I say thank you and good luck, further luck with your meetings.